Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 49. This is Jamie Russo. Thanks for listening. Today, we're going to talk about attracting and hiring community managers, as well as developing a healthy culture. If you're working on hiring a community manager and would like a sample job description, text the phrase sample job to 44222, and we will deliver that to your inbox. That's sample job to 44222. And before we jump in, I want to tell you about Spare Desk. As more and more freelancers and professionals become untethered to a corporate campus, they are embracing their mobility and the ability to work from anywhere around the world. Spare Desk launched earlier this year and is becoming the platform for freelancers and digital nomads to find great places to work wherever they want to work. Spare Desk has thousands of active users who browse and book desks in over 35 cities every day. If you want to show up in those search results, list your spaces at sparedesk.co/spaces. That's sparedesk.co/spaces. Okay, on to today's episode. Thanks for joining me today. I'm here with Iris Cavanaugh, who works with shared workspace organizations to streamline operations and develop dynamic communities. She fell in love with coworking when, as a member in 2009, she realized how powerful the experience of a real in-person community was and quickly started thinking of ways to change the world through the coworking model, which I would argue she has done. Iris led the Nextspace team during its initial expansion from one location to 9 locations. She co-founded the League of Extraordinary Coworking Spaces and CoShare, and she has produced freelance camps and has spoken at various conferences, including the Global Workspace Association Conference. Shameless plug, our conference is September 11th through the 13th this year, and the Global Coworking Unconference Conference, which, if you haven't gotten your ticket yet, is in May. GCUC.co is the website there. So Iris currently consults and leads coworking mastermind groups. She heads the board of directors of CoShare and showcases industry and movement leaders through her media series, which she actually just mentioned is on hold, but we'll let her talk about that because she has a great archive of really great interviews. She lives in Santa Cruz, California, with her 2 kids, 2 cats, 1 dog, and 2 chickens. Iris, thank you for joining me today.
Good morning, Jamie. Thank you.
So I gave a little bit of intro, and I feel like it barely does you justice. You are, you know, one of the really early founders of the co-working movement and have made so many contributions to the space. But tell us a little bit more, you know, fill in your background where I left off and kind of talk about your journey through co-working and how you've landed where you are now.
Great. Well, so prior to becoming, prior to joining the Nextspace team, I was actually running the small boutique marketing firm that branded Nextspace. So the CEO, Jeremy Neuner, was a client of mine. We'd worked on a couple of projects with him. And so when he decided to open Nextspace, it was pretty exciting. And I had never heard of co-working before. But through the branding process and you know, kind of watching him gather the community around him, I got really excited about what was happening at this cool project downtown in the city I live in. And it was right around the time that Obama was elected, and it was all of a sudden okay and kind of encouraged to be somebody who worked in the sustainability sector. And that's my background, kind of deep background, is having come from a family that worked in sustainability, and having kind of grown up in that world. I felt really excited to be able to then apply my project management and account management skills to some projects that worked on, you know, making the world a better place. So I actually left that firm and became a member of Nextspace, and started doing some freelance projects. And it was a few weeks, maybe a month into my membership, that Jeremy asked me to join him. And I guess you could say the rest is history. but I'll just share a few things about my first, I think kind of how I knew that co-working was for me. I was so shocked that I was getting paid to just kind of stand around and talk to people. It was such a foreign thing. And I had so many moments where I was like, oh, I'd better not, like, Jeremy's going to wonder why I'm still talking to this person, you know? And it took me probably about 4 months to sort of relax into the role, and really understand that I was there to make people feel comfortable. And of course, plunge the toilets as needed as right. well.
So much glamour.
But, it was sort of that casualty of my personality, which was that I never really belonged in one circle in my life. I've always been what I referred to up until co-working as I've always been a circle walker, somebody mm-hmm. who sort of connected different groups of people, and was sort of that connector type of personality. And at Nextspace in co-working, it was kind of that aha moment. Wow, I was kind of born to do this. I was born for this thing that I'm doing here. So that was wonderful. And so as we grew, you know, my role grew and was shaped and changed. And I think, you know, my skill sets matched different aspects of how the company was scaling and growing in different ways. And so I transitioned from the COO role into the person who managed the community and managed the team about 3 years in. And so that's kind of how I landed in my sweet spot of really understanding how to build a really strong community and then how to hire and train staff who not just build that community but sustain it in a way that allows the community to sell itself, as you will, and also sustains the bottom line for the company.
Yeah, I mean, the community manager role is so unique. And for those of you who don't know Iris, I mean, she really is the go-to person on this topic. I have also been a member of the League of Extraordinary Coworking Spaces, and many a meeting will just sit around and, you know, try to pick Iris's brain on challenges and, you know, people, you know, trying to like hire the right people and, you know, really make the most out of that role and who's a, you know, good fit and how do you find them and all those things. So this role though, right, was, I mean, you were probably one of the earliest community managers. Was that your title at the time? You guys had crazy titles for all sorts of things. So
we did eventually. Yeah. I mean, I was hired as the chief operations officer. Okay. So that was my title actually. But about a year and a half in, we used all kinds of terms to describe ourselves. Like I think everybody does in co-working, like mm-hmm. camp counselor yeah. and, you know, tour guide and, den mother and all of those things. But at some point I landed on this idea that I felt like I was a museum curator. And I remember actually there's a video of me at Pre-Juicy event in Austin. And I'm talking about that. And I just found it recently. I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. So look at that. But really I felt like, you know, my job is to really understand this collection of people and to put them together in ways, that enhance each other and enhance the community. And of course, you know, I'm not a puppet master. I don't mean it that way, but yeah. more, you know, knowing who is here and how to combine them. So, so from the role that I had and the role that I played, and as we began to scale, one of the concerns that we had was, well, you know, how do we scale Jeremy or how do we scale Iris? Mm-hmm. And so we really took a step back and we looked at what are the personality traits that make up the two of us who have successfully built this community that people love and people feel a part of and want to come to every day. And so we sort of did a little psychological, you know, kind of experiment and built a profile for what we thought the perfect Nextspace curator would be, and headed down the road. And I think a lot of what we landed on 7 years ago was probably pretty true to what you would see today in a community manager in most co-working spaces.
How, you know, I think there's been such an evolution about, you know, sort of formalizing that role and hiring for it. How have you seen that the approach to recruiting and hiring co-working staff and community managers evolve over the last several years? How are people kind of looking at that role, and, you know, have things changed around kind of the type of person they fill or how they attract those people? What are you seeing happen?
Yeah. I feel like in probably the past 2, maybe 3 years, but definitely 2 years, is where the kind of curve of the road has kind of, deepened, and we are seeing more and more community managers being hired. And people are really identifying what qualities they're looking for. And so over the past 7 years, what I saw was, a lot of companies try to hire people from, you know, identifying hospitality as a background that a community manager needed, identifying office management as a background that community managers needed. I think prior to the last couple of years, what was sort of remarkable was, I think there was a time where in the movement of co-working, the idea that you staffed it, there was something wrong with that.
Yep.
And, that meant that you were the corporate type. And so I think there's been an acceptance of the role of community manager, and that I think is really good, important, because as the numbers show us, you know, if you look at the Global Coworking Survey, the numbers show us that people do stick to their coworking space because of the community managers. Yeah. So the validation of the role has come along, as have the understanding that you need to pay somebody well enough to do the job that they do. You know, this isn't a job that is a rocket scientist. You don't need an MBA to run a co-working space. But it is a job that's taxing, and it is a job that is emotionally taxing, you know, and you do want somebody who's going to come in every day excited to be there, excited to see the members, and you want them to be able to kick butt all day long and get a lot of different things done. And so I've seen people be willing to pay for that personality that can do that, that go-getter, who's also a really happy, kind of happy type of person as well, and takes a lot of responsibility. And in the past 2 years, I've seen a fair amount of people be able to move from one co-working company to the next.
Yep.
So our industry, I feel like, is finally getting sort of a pool of candidates that we can work with. And what I find really exciting are the job boards that are popping up right now. So CoShare last year in 2016 identified a co-working job board as one of our target goals. And we actually did go ahead and build that, but there's some other ones out, you know, that are even kind of more robust than what we were able to do. So I think that's really exciting. If a person leaves a co-working job in, say, San Francisco, the chances of them getting hired into another co-working job are actually pretty high nowadays. And it's, so it's not just this kind of one-off weird position that they had when they just got out of college. It can actually become a career now, or at least working in the co-working industry. If you start out as a, you know, community manager, you might want to move into a different role in the company. But I think we're actually creating a career path for people.
Yeah, right. A recognized role that, to your point, people know to, maybe not really widely, but people know to search for, and that kind of has an understanding of what that is, whereas before it wasn't. So, you know, it's funny because I think I kind of forgot that there was a point, and I think there are still folks who have this philosophy of like not staffing a space that community should sort of, you know, do itself. But it's interesting because I think one of the concerns is, you know, there are like asset owners who are doing spaces because they have the space. And my concern is them not hiring community managers and recognizing, you know, how important that piece is. And I kind of forgot that, like, there's that, it's such an interesting almost sort of loop where you have the folks who think community is so core that why do you need someone to, you know, sort of quote unquote manage it. Mm-hmm. And then on the opposite end of that, you have like the space that's the given piece of it, but the community is not the given. And you, you know, mm-hmm. you need someone to make sure that that's really a core part of the experience. So it's an interesting time.
Yeah. And I think, you know, at one point, I think community managers were considered receptionists.
Right.
And so that's another change as well. Although some people do still hire receptionists if community isn't their goal and transactional relationships might be more what their space is about,
yep.
then they might hire a receptionist instead of a community manager.
Yeah, although I think we'll see that really, I think that is merging that mm-hmm. mostly we'll see. And it depends on the size of the space too, because I think that's the other thing we're seeing is, you know, instead of 4,000 square foot spaces, we have 35,000 square foot spaces. Mm-hmm. So you may have someone who is, you know, performs more operational duties and, you know, meet and greet, but also somebody who really needs to be engaged in, you know, what's happening in the community and piecing people together who may not run across each other across 35,000 square feet, you know, so naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, from, because you talked about kind of this mobility for community managers, which almost, you know, implies a risk that if you are not a great operator to work for, somebody also now knows they, you know, have some opportunity to do this job somewhere else. So if you're an operator, you know, are there things that you see that help to create a culture that attracts the right community management talent?
Yeah. So, you know, my viewpoint of this might be a little bit skewed, Jamie, and I will admit to that readily because I live in the Silicon Valley or I live on the outskirts of the Silicon Valley.
mm-hmm.
And as we know, the rest of the world doesn't operate the way we do in terms of benefits and perks and company culture and all of that. But what I would say is that having an open and transparent culture is going to be pretty important. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. You're more likely to build a community when you're more open and transparent with people. You know, you're inviting conversation and you're inviting feedback, and both of those add to a culture where community can be fostered more readily because people are encouraged to talk with each other and to you know, to give ideas to the operator for how to run their business better. And then I really believe in what we practiced at Nextspace when I was there, which is basically a principle called mastery, autonomy, and purpose. And so I think as an employer, you know, obviously you want a good hire in order to make this happen, but make sure that you hire people who have mastery. Make sure that you train them really well to master their job and master their role. Then give them the autonomy to fulfill their purpose. Make sure that they understand what their purpose is. And so I think, you know, understanding as an operator that you're hiring the person who is really needing to be empowered to make the day-to-day decisions in the space that are needed, I think that's a really important thing to know, because if you empower somebody to make day-to-day decisions, then you empower them to have creativity in the way that they approach the problems that are happening in the business. If they have to go to you to get cleared for every decision they come up with, they're less likely to come to you after a few times because they think, well, they probably won't like that idea, so I don't think I'll bring that idea up. And so, you know, giving that autonomy will, in the long run, lead to a higher productivity. And if you have a good hire, a more engaged community, which leads to longer memberships, retaining more members, and, you know, retaining your bottom line longer. Less turnover in co-working is better. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how does an operator sort of, if they want to reflect on their culture, you know, how do they know if they have a positive, open, transparent culture? What are sort of some things they can think about to know if, you know, if they have any red flags or if they're kind of moving in the right direction?
Yeah. One thing that I can think of is, would you as an operator be willing to share a business challenge that you're having with some of your members? Would you be willing to seek out feedback from your members on a business challenge that you're having, which can be scary because these people are paying us to be here. And if we don't seem like everything's perfect and we really know what we're doing, then they might not want to pay us anymore. They might leave if they think that we're kind of a dumpster fire.
Right, right.
And that's probably true to a certain extent. But the flip side of that is that if you involve your members in some of your business decisions, or at least in researching your business decisions, they have ideas because they're also running businesses, many of them. So they have ideas that will be directly applicable to your co-working business or your shared workspace business. And I think that you're building loyalty through that conversation and through that relationship that you're building, because they're more likely to feel loyal to you once they know that, you know, you two are running a business and that you're struggling with. So, you know, so another one to look at would be, when I raise my prices, how am I going to raise my prices? Am I going to talk to my members beforehand? Am I going to grandfather in my current members into prices, or am I just going to raise the prices for everybody? And I don't care if I lose a few people, because the new people that come in, you know, they're going to be paying the higher rate. Well, if that's kind of the way you go down the road, you're probably more focused on the financial and less on the community, which means the culture is going to be, you know, a less engaged culture. And then finally, know who you are as a manager. Are you somebody who, I keep coming back to this autonomy. Are you somebody who can allow an employee to work autonomously, or do you really need to micromanage what they do? Because I find that cultures where somebody needs to be managed at every turn is, it's a stifling culture, and people are less likely to feel supported and able to grow in that culture. And Jamie, one other thing I want to say too about culture is that, you know, I'm going to make sort of a generalized statement here, but in general, a lot of co-working spaces or shared workspaces are hiring the millennial generation, people from the millennial generation, to run their spaces. And, you know, that's not true across the board, but it is a general trend that I'm seeing. And millennials, once again, general statement, but millennials like to feel included. They like to feel that their voice matters. They like to know that their ideas are heard and are respected and are considered. And so if you're somebody who's hiring a millennial, maybe take a little course on that. on managing millennials ahead of time, especially if you're a Gen Xer, because we do operate differently. But also, you know, think about that. What, once your millennial, you know, in 3 to 6 months or 8 months, when your millennial masters the job that you're asking them to do, they know how to do everything, they're doing it well, they're going to want to be challenged again. So how can you sort of almost tranche the responsibilities that you give them so that you can keep challenging them through a couple years of employment so that they stick with you?
Right. Yeah. The retention piece. I mean, that's a smart actually way to look at it, because the retention piece is hard. And I think, there's a general sense in the industry, to your point, it's a taxing role. And, but also it's right. If you give them the autonomy, they can also just learn a ton and have some really amazing skills to move on to the next thing, which I've always been, you know, super excited for my team when they're ready to go. But it's always devastating to have to kind of start over. And they're such an integral part of the community and the success of the space. So the tranching is an interesting idea.
Yeah.
You know, and the culture piece, it's funny because I know you do CrossFit. I often look at sort of a lot of parallels in the CrossFit community with co-working. And my CrossFit gym actually just recently moved locations. And I had done a mini move in my Chicago space And I had this sense that like it had to feel very seamless for the members. And so I kind of kept everything to myself and just like created this plan kind of in the, you know, the back end and, you know, announced it with an email and it was happening really quickly and we were just going to be done. And, you know, and, mm-hmm. and it was not the right approach. And in yeah. my mind, I thought, well, they're paying me. I'm trying to be professional about this and just make this, you know, but they're very invested in change management. It's like I threw everything out the window that I've ever known about change management. And I couldn't, after the fact, like couldn't believe that I had done it. And then when my CrossFit gym moved, you know, the guy, he just nailed it. He was doing videos and sending them out via email for, you know, if there were people who weren't coming into the gym to get the announcements and, mm-hmm. you know, be part of the in-person conversation and setting expectations, you know, and letting people know if little things like the bathroom didn't get done in time, you know, just mm-hmm. like mistakes happened on their side, but they were so transparent about it that to your point, everybody just was so supportive because they felt a part of the process and they were excited for the move, even though there, you know, there were inconveniences on our end, but the transparency like meant everything. And it just really smoothed over all the little things that didn't go quite as planned. And I sort of look at that as a parallel. It's like, you know, engaging people and helping them feel a part of the process. They'll overlook a lot of the little things.
Yeah. It's so true. And it's counterintuitive
yeah.
for a business person.
Right.
Because, you know, there's always been this wall between the customer
right.
and the and the product that they're buying and the people actually creating that product. And yet in co-working, we're co-creating with our members.
Right.
And so recognizing that early on, I think is really helpful. And really understanding what kind of culture do you want to create? You know, another thought around that is understanding what your brand promise is. Are you a hospitality based
yeah. yep.
space or are you more, a little more casual? And, you know, that's sort of going to determine what expectations you have of your community manager and what expectations you are okay with the community having of them. And I'll give you a little example. So I came, having been an account manager for clients like Microsoft and Apple and Plantronics, you know, very, very, high security companies. So at the marketing firm I was at, that was who I was working with. So when I came to Nextspace, you know, my mind was still in that high security, take care of your clients.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is always yes.
Right. Right. yep.
Kind of
no matter
background.
How painful that yes may be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that is not actually the best culture to have in a co-working space, yep. it turns out. Unless you're okay with paying somebody to do everything for your members, which some
right.
brands, that's their hospitality promise.
Yep.
But if you're running a little leaner, and so your staff needs to be leaner, you know, really understanding that you have to set expectations with your members that, you know, the staff is not there to do everything for them, but to show them how to do it themselves and be helpful in that way. You know, teach a person to fish and they'll fish forever, but if you give them a fish, they're only going to eat once.
Right. But I think to your point, knowing that sort of where you're positioning up front is really important because then you design around it. Like coffee is a great example. Do you have members make their own coffee or does
right,
someone on staff make the coffee
right.
and deciding that so that there's no shift in that, because if you go from making it to they have to make it, that's, that's an, you know, an awkward transition. And,
right.
and then from the start, you just create an experience around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on how you want to handle it. And then, right, and the language you use and all the, culture is just a fascinating piece to me because I think it's so, it warrants forethought and yet it's hard to do. I think if
yeah.
you aren't, so if you don't have sort of someone helping you think through those things, because you get so caught up in the sort of the operational things of starting a space and all the, you know, attracting members, but sort of the softer piece of thinking through all those things, which can be so incredibly important.
Yeah. And there's always a balance. I mean, I think of dishes.
Yeah. Oh God.
Right. I mean, so Nextspace was a more casual, professional, but casual co-working environment. And, you know, there was always dishes to do. Of course there are. And so you can leave notes for your members and send emails out. But at the end of the day, you know, because you're encouraging people to be taking care of themselves and to do their neighbor's dishes or their fellow members' dishes if there's one in the sink. But at the end of the day, who's being paid actually to manage the facilities, right? Yeah, that's the community manager. So there's always that balance in creating your culture.
Yes, but making your community managers do the dishes all the time can also be a retention problem.
Exactly. Okay, I'm a big advocate for dishwashers.
You're right, seriously. So kind of looping back to the community manager, you know, kind of talking about how that role has evolved and how, you know, there's maybe kind of a more expected job description and mobility there. Do you see a point at which there will be any sort of like standards for that role or certification or, I don't know. Do you think when we talk about that as part of the GWA a lot, like what is, you know, will that role become more formalized in some way?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've definitely had these conversations with several, you know, people in the co-working world as well over the past couple of years. And I would love to say it would be good to see that. I mean, I would love to see that happening. If there were standards, my guess would be, that it would, there would probably be a couple of different tiers, because you might have, I'll just call them junior and senior for lack of better terms at this point, but you might have a junior community manager who has, you know, the responsibility of working with the members, of making connections, of helping to design and execute on events. And then the more senior community manager who is responsible for, the facilities, as a company, you might also make them responsible for the P&L. Mm-hmm. And then they're responsible for the health of the space, which could mean that they need some conflict resolution skills from time to time. So if I were looking at sort of what the standards for a lead community manager would be, that would be somebody who is an excellent communicator, and both in written and verbally. They have a background in hospitality, and they have a really good understanding in how to set limits. And I don't exactly know how to say that.
Yep.
So I have to think about that one a little bit.
Yeah, I get what you're saying because I've had, right.
It's easy to give away the firm in co-working and you can't do that.
Yep.
And then a business, some type of experience in running a business, I think is really important if they are running the P&L. And I am an advocate for that because I feel like it gives them ownership around the sales and they're more likely to be a better salesperson if they know why they have to make those
and set better limits.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. And that, I mean, that's a big part of the transparency conversation, like transparency both ways, you know, with members as that makes sense, maybe not the P&L, but, and then with your staff so that they really understand, right, your thinking and decision-making.
Yeah. And then again, depending on your brand, you may do events as part of your revenue and you may not. But if you do events as part of your revenue, then you're going to want somebody who has event management, qualifications as well.
Yeah. A lot of hats.
Yeah. It is a lot of hats.
Yeah. So this is sort of a broad wrap-up question, but if you were to give some advice to a shared space operator approaching hiring and culture development, what are some tips you would give? And I also know you do work in this area, so if you have some advice for people wanting to connect with you and ways to do that, let us know that as well.
Great. Yeah. So if you're looking to hire and you haven't hired yet, I think the first step is to get clear on what your culture is. And then to really understand what your brand, and culture and how those two combine, in your company, and how those two affect the role that you're building. So once again, we talked about whether you're hospitality driven or more transactional, those things all really matter in who you're hiring. So get clear on that. Give yourself a little time with a whiteboard and, you know, do a little visioning project. There's probably someone in your community who could help you with that.
Right. Good point.
And then write a job description. And I think it's really important that you put everything that that person's going to be responsible for in that job description. And don't make it vague, because this is where you're setting your expectations. And I'm not talking about a task list. I'm not talking about like an action item list. I'm talking about areas of responsibility. And, you know, I like to include in those job descriptions language like everything you do in this job will be in the interest of building community. And, you know, so making sure that your job description really encompasses every aspect of what this person is responsible for. And then from that job description, write a compelling ad to advertise your job. If you just put that job description out there, people are going to be kind of scared off.
Yes.
So write a compelling ad. Talk about how fun this role is. Talk about the members a little bit. Talk about the space itself. And then, you know, sell what this person will be responsible for as a fun superhero style job or something yeah. that, you know, in some language that matches your brand. And then I really believe in, so my interview process is a pretty long one, and I really believe in the final interview being an in-person contract day. So it's amazing how people can interview really well. You might put them through three or four interviews, and they seem great, and then you get them on the job for a day, and that is, they're obviously not the right fit for one reason or another, and vice versa. I've had people who, there was just something about them, so I brought them in for that final trial day, and they blew me out of the water mm-hmm. with what they could do. So I give people a list of tasks. It usually involves a writing project, basically a detailed kind of, you know, tick list of things that they have to get done within a short amount of time. I ask them to give me ideas on the design and layout of the space, and then I always have them do like some kind of scavenger hunt or member identification exercise mm-hmm. where they have to go out and find certain members and then report back mm-hmm. on what they learned from those members. Mm-hmm. And then I ask the members what they thought of each candidate as well. And mm-hmm. I let the members know ahead of time that yep. they're targets. So those are some of the tips that I have. In terms of sourcing, I don't use Craigslist, just as an FYI. I use the job boards that are out there because the quality of candidates are much more professional.
Yeah. Better funnel.
Yeah.
I love the scavenger hunt idea, and I love the one day test.
Yeah. And people, you know, if they get the job, then they just got a little extra income. I pay them whatever, $15 an hour, whatever your kind of basic, living wage is in your area. As a contractor, you know, and then if they don't work out, no problem. Pay them and they're on their way. And, you know, you spent a good $100 for the day knowing that you didn't hire somebody who was going to be the wrong person.
Yep.
And then if you want to, if people want to reach out to me, I can be found at coworkingconsultant.co.
Perfect. Iris, thank you for sharing your experience and your insights with us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. I know we won't go into this now, but Iris is always full of projects that are moving the needle in the co-working world and is super busy. Iris will be at Juicy in Juicy, do we call it USA? What do we call it?
I think we call it Juicy USA.
Okay.
Juicy USA.
I was thinking, in New York. So if you're looking forward to meeting her in person and connecting with her, you can find her there. I'm excited to see her there. So Iris, thanks again for joining us. And I will make sure this will be episode number 49. And Iris's contact information and notes on what we talked about here today and links to references we made today, like to Lexi and CoShare, will be in the show notes as well. So look for those there at everythingcoworking.com/49. Thank you, Iris.
Thank you, Jamie.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Iris and I today. Just a reminder, if you want a sample job description for a community manager, text the phrase sample job to 44222. And that'll show up in your inbox. And as a reminder, Check out Spare Desk and get your space listed if you're interested in attracting more freelancers and professionals who are looking for amazing places to work around the world. That's sparedesk.co/spaces. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.